Mondays, we hear from Elise Glink, and she's here to tell you about, well, I guess credit debt to start, huh, Elise?
Well, there's a lot of it going around, John. We're seeing the amount of debt that people are carrying just across all generations, all sizes and shapes. Everybody's now back to carrying the biggest amount of credit card debt ever. And if you are likely to carry credit card debt, it's running somewhere over $8,000. Now, for millennials, which is a specific generational group, the most common type of debt that millennials are carrying is credit card debt. About 67% of those who are millennial are carrying a credit card debt balance, and they owe about $5,300, almost $5,400 on average.
Trying to think now what the average credit card debt is. I think it's higher than that.
It is. It's overall, for people who carry debt, they're carrying about $8,000 plus. But millennials who are younger and haven't had as much time to accumulate credit card debt, apparently, they're carrying an average of $5,350.
I know. I'm like, you guys, no, don't. I can tell you how this movie ends, and it's not good. For a lot of reasons, many of them good. People borrow, they use credit, but at 18%, that's a bad deal.
Yeah, and that interest rate is going up thanks to, you know, the movements that the Fed is making, and they're trying to slow things down. And things are slowing down, right? There's no question about that. And we can talk about, you know, how that pertains to the real estate market in particular, because we're seeing a lot of slowdown there. But in terms of credit card debt, that's one thing that it's not going so well for millennials. On the other hand, their net worth has increased substantially.
It sounds like maybe the K-shaped curve or the haves and have-nots. I mean, as much as they're incurring more credit debt, they seem to be doing well as a group, right?
They are doing well. So Magnify Money, which is a lending tree company, I believe, they have calculated the average net worth of millennials to be about $128,000 as of the first quarter of 2022. That's a jump of over 100% in just a year, which is tremendous. And a lot of that is coming from their net worth in real estate.
Oh, really? So their houses, those who own houses, have appreciated, huh?
They have, but we're also seeing increases in the amount of money that millennials have in bank accounts. We're starting to see the fruit of the rule that was passed a while ago, where when you join a company, there's an auto enroll into the company's 401ks. And the amount that's set is usually somewhere between 3% and 6% of your salary. And a lot of people, just out of inertia, they don't know, they don't realize, they decide to let that ride. And what's happened is, you know, when you've seen all of the years of growth of the stock market, I know we're down now, but we've still had tremendous growth over the last 5 or 6 years. Millennials, who are a little bit older than their Gen Z counterparts, they're a little bit older, and they've had more years for that money to both accumulate and appreciate. And we're seeing the benefit of that right now.
Do you have stats on Gen Z then?
I don't have a lot of stats on Gen Z because Gen Z is just entering the workforce. So Gen Zs are typically, I think, 24 years old is the oldest of them. They have typically only been in the workforce for 2 or 3 years. And so they haven't had as much time to either accumulate by having sort of an auto on for their 401k. And of course, we've now seen over the last 3 years, we saw a lot of growth, but then we saw it fall back. So they haven't had as many years to let that accumulate.
Plus, isn't it true, at least about Gen Z, maybe their older siblings too, that they're less interested in acquiring real estate? They probably aren't inclined right now to develop a portfolio like their grandparents were.
Well, I think Gen Zs think they're never going to be able to buy houses, which I can guarantee everybody who wants one will eventually be able to get one. But what's interesting about Gen Z is they seem to have, even more so than the bottom half, and I don't mean that in terms of wealth, I mean just the younger half of the millennials, They have, Gen Zs are very focused on money, and they're focused on accumulating it, they're focused on saving it, and in some respects, they're better savers than the other generations that are a little bit older. And maybe that's because they're coming of age in such a strange time. The pandemic's had a real effect.
Yeah, that might be sobering to them, or maybe they've seen how their parents or grandparents have struggled, the millennials or the, you know, the older siblings may be millennials or the baby boomers, but it seems to me like maybe they also have the advantage of living at home more as well. I know plenty of people in their 20s, out of college, out of high school into, 30s, who live at home or are somewhat subsidized by their parents. And and my generation never, seldom had that luxury, let's put it that way.
No, you're absolutely right. In fact, we have the largest number of young people, and by that I mean young adults who have, over the age of 18, that have come back and lived at home. And a lot of that was due to the pandemic. There was simply nowhere else for them to go. Colleges closed down. So if you were at college, you went home, schools. So, but it was also people they couldn't manage living even in their own apartments or with people they didn't know. So they went home and gave up their apartments as well. And that did have the effect of helping them save a lot of money. Plus, all those people got money from the government over the last couple of years because of the pandemic. So that is good news.
That's what happened to us. My son was going to school. The campus closed. He had to live somewhere. He decided he was full-time. He wasn't working full-time. So he moved in with us. And frankly, it was great. Once upon a time, you'd sort of wag your finger at that scene. But I think we're all past judging how other people decide to live or save. And what better a place to put your money than maybe in your kids? I know you're supposed to take care of yourself first so that you don't become a burden for your children. But after that, if you want to help your kids without hurting them, I say do what makes you feel good. By the way, listen to this here, Elise. Mm-hmm. Gen Z, you were talking about the savings, but also the credit debt of millennials. And then we talked a little bit about Gen Z. And this supports what you were saying. Gen Z is very pragmatic. They are also, going to really reinvigorate our economy and take charge of social issues. That's good to hear. And 630 says, thank you, John. I'm not feeling as terrible that my 27-year-old son is still at home.
Well, listen, I love that. And what I was going to say is, when your son came home from college and was living at home, mine did as well. During the beginning of the pandemic, his job, he was supposed to start a job in May. He graduated early, was supposed to go traveling in Asia. And that is right when the pandemic hit. He came home and literally lived in our house for the next 9 months while he waited for his job to start, knew he was getting a job. And then he lived at home for about another, a total, I would say, about a year and a quarter. Loved having him. Kind of wish he were still at home. I was joking with a friend over the weekend that we raised our kids to have boundaries, and now I'm sorry about that.
I remember when the pandemic started, and a lot of adult children were living with their parents, maybe because their jobs washed up too, and they were out of income. And just families were all sort of living in their own pods. And there was a story, I think it might have been in the Atlantic or the New Yorker, and it was the story of a young woman who was like back in her bedroom, but she so enjoyed coming down for cocktail hour that mom and dad would always have a cocktail early in the evening. And as a teenager, when she was living at home, she never participated in that. And now she would come down at 5 o'clock, 5:30 from work, and they would all sit there, and mom would always make a different kind of cocktail most nights. They'd try something out, and they'd sit around and sip it and visit like adults. And that sounds dreamy to me. That sounds really nice.
It does. It does. And I think that when you get to a place with your kids where you can sort of accept that they're adults and move on in that new direction, that's a really a wonderful thing for everybody. And I think the pandemic gave us all a chance to reset. For those of us who have older kids, if you've got younger kids, boy, hats off to you, because that was, these last couple of years have probably been the toughest times to be a parent in, I don't know, 100 years
maybe?
Oh, I think
that must be so true. You're absolutely right. We all only know what we know. And I'm not raising teenagers in a pandemic, but remember all of the conversations too about my 15-year-old wants to go with the other 15-year-old kids to the mall or to wherever, and I won't let her go out because it's not safe. And you live that way for a year or two, some of you.
Yeah.
Well, tough. Let's talk about new home sales. New home sales. What's happening on the real estate front?
Well, you know, the real estate is just running smack dab into much higher interest rates, and it's starting to affect everything. So new home sales down sharply, over 8%. In June, the average sort of seasonally adjusted annualized rate of sale is $590,000. We should be selling $1 million to $1.5 million new homes a year. We're selling about a third of those. This is the slowest pace since December of 2018, except for 2020, right in March, April, and May, when we had the big drop right when COVID started. But year to date, new home sales are down 13.5%. We've got a large supply increase now of 9.3%. I was in Wisconsin over the weekend driving by some new home sales and new home developments and townhouse developments, and I was really surprised at some of the prices that those homes are going for. You've got sort of in very rural areas attached 2-3 bedroom townhouses selling for over $300,000.
Yeah. And we saw that in Southwest Michigan too. There's a
exactly,
lot of houses.
And so
you just go, "Are you kidding me?" Wow.
Right. We'll have to see what happens there. You know, I told our friends who live up there that, you know, when they start to see these homes go down in value, you know, we're actually in a recession as opposed to just sort of a temporary thing. But we're also seeing the same thing happen with new home sales. Now, the inventory is growing, existing home sales. The inventory is growing, so that's good, but we're still seeing very high prices because the people who are buying expensive homes, they're less sensitive to interest rates going up, but first-time buyers or people who are watching every penny and trying to buy a home, you know, they're really falling short, both because the price of homes is going up and the mortgage interest rates are going up. So real estate is really having some trouble right now.
Yeah, but you would think that rising interest rates would depress prices, excluding those high-end homes, but maybe the limited inventory is trumping even that, and the prices, you say, are staying solid?
They're saying they're staying high and going higher. So, and again, you know, this doesn't necessarily reflect the price of the individual home. What this shows you is that more homes at the higher end of the spectrum are being bought than homes at the lower end, and so the median home price goes up. That's the middle point where the same number are sold above as below.
Talk to me real quick. I got a minute here about back to school.
Yeah, so it's time to start shopping, and nearly 50% of those who have already started the back-to-school shopping are having trouble getting what they need for their kids because of shortages. Again, this comes to us from LendingTree, but 36% of Americans are already shopping. 75% of parents are stressed about that. A third of back-to-school shoppers are already facing challenges. 44% say they can't get what they need. 13% said they completed everything on their list, those do-gooders, until when they started buying their stuff in June. But if you're waiting now, you really want to get on this because there's a lot of stuff that just isn't coming in as quickly as we had hoped, or your child will start school with maybe not as many notebooks as recommended.
Elise Glink's online. You can always check her stuff out at thinkglink.com and listen for her with Tom Fortino on WGN Radio Sunday mornings at 6:30. Let's talk next Monday, you and me.
You bet, John.
John Williams here. Jim Dahlke is too. Senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Let's talk about 86 repairs. Welcome back to the show. How are you, by the way?
Hey, John. Good. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. Yeah, 86 repairs. Really interesting, fast-growing startup here in Chicago. They're working with brands like McDonald's and Jimmy John's to help manage the repairs in their restaurants. So, you know, I think everything from HVAC repairs to walk-in freezers and everything in between. So 86 Repairs just raised $15 million last week. A handful of big investors behind this company, including TDF, Gordon Food Services, and Cleveland Avenue, the food-focused venture firm led by former McDonald's CEO Don Thompson. 86 Repairs really kind of taking on a really interesting segment here. You know, they work with more than 2,000 restaurants across the U.S. and Canada. Not only fast food, but they also do upscale restaurants as well. So Boca Restaurant Group is a part of their customer base as well. So really, this is a one-stop shop for restaurants to handle any kind of repair that happens in their building. And 86 Repairs really were coming at a point where restaurants, you know, need to keep their systems up and running more than ever.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the automobile business. That is, new car sales aren't what they used to be. They can't get the inventory out. All the more reason to make sure that you have your existing car in as good a running condition, so mechanics are at a premium. And I think we've talked about this company before. It's surprising to me that this niche exists, because you'd think that there would have been the need for this industry all along to repair the machines used in restaurants.
That's exactly right. And, you know, one thing that they're able to do is kind of bring it all into one platform. So no matter what kind of maintenance you need, you kind of have one place to go for it. So you don't need a different person for the HVAC versus a different person for the stove, for the freezer. So really kind of a one-stop shop is really what they're able to provide. And, you know, what's interesting, too, about 86 Repairs is they're actually not the only Chicago startup that's helping restaurants keep their systems running. There's another startup in town called Science on Call. Their focus is tech support. So anything that happens on the tech side, you know, computers go down, glitches, other kind of tech problems, they help provide a 24/7 platform for restaurants on that side. And they raised $1.6 million earlier this year.
There was a crypto investor gathering last week in Chicago. What do you know about that?
Yeah, you know, the cryptocurrency market really experiencing a major crash this year. The value of a lot of the major tokens, Bitcoin, Ethereum, you know, other assets have just completely plummeted. But sort of despite the turbulent times for the blockchain industry, there's a really strong group of investors and entrepreneurs in Chicago that really kind of believe in what's happening here in the city. And they kind of were able to get together for that purpose last week at what was called Web3 Investor Day. This was an in-person event organized by a local blockchain VC firm, Decasonic. They've raised about a $50 million fund earlier this year. And they work in investing in startups that are working on the metaverse and NFTs and other kind of crypto projects. And now the event brought together hundreds of folks in Chicago. You know, the founder of Decasonic, Paul Sue, told me that they believe this is the largest crypto conference in the Midwest to date. So hundreds of folks kind of came to Chicago really to talk about the future of Web3. And, you know, Paul and mentioned to me that, you know, despite what's happening in the industry and, you know, the emergence of, you know, these scammers and other bad actors that are kind of being revealed in the industry, he believes that there are some real builders in Chicago that are working on, you know, fundamental businesses that are good for the industry and kind of are going to be a part of this sort of Web3 focused future. So we've got a lot of investors in the area that are working in Web3 and cryptocurrency, and some businesses as well. CoinFlip is a Bitcoin ATM operator.
Right.
They have been one of the fastest growing companies in Chicago over the last few years.
How many folks were in town for that? Do you know? Did you say?
Yeah, 300. So 300 folks. That's kind of a mix between both investors and founders and other just sort of business folks who are crypto curious.
We were downtown Thursday night and we were getting some drinks and just visiting with some friends on the Riverwalk. And there were some people there who were in town from out of town at a convention. And the woman who I was talking to, her group was banks. There was some banker group that was there. Anyway, there's about 1,500 people. And I was just so glad. And she said, you know what? She goes, she's traveled a lot. San Francisco, Seattle, all across the country. She says, everybody in my group is now out having the big steak dinner at a restaurant. I've done this so many times. I don't need to do that anymore. I told my team, you go party. I'm just going to go to the Riverwalk and have a drink by myself. So that's where I was chatting her up. And she said, you know what? This is the best city. This is the most beautiful city. She goes, I just love coming to Chicago. I'll bring this convention to Chicago anytime because it's just so. And I was just like, so glad to hear that. Because I told her, I said, you know, we're worried about people's fears about coming into the city. And she said, yeah, I hear that, but they're not here. Those of us who know Chicago know it's as safe as any town. I'm like, are you doing my show? Because that's what I say every day. I'm just relaying that to you, Jim, but I'm always happy to hear conventions come to Chicago.
That's exactly right. And we've already seen quite a bit of momentum on the tech side, too, where we've talked about other events and conventions that are bringing the city's tech folks together. So certainly great to see. Hey, especially in the summertime, perfect time to show up.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was a beautiful night, too. Talk about the Thompson Center. We've talked about that a little more, but what are you knowing or thinking about the Google purchase now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, really the way I think about this is it's such a vote of confidence for Chicago's tech sector. You know, Google first came to Chicago back in 2000. Just a couple of people, two people in River North working out of a shared workspace. And, you know, the growth that Google has seen to date, you know, they're encroaching on about 2,000 employees. And a lot of those are technology jobs. I mean, Google really first came to Chicago as a place to have a regional sales office. And, you know, that has really grown over the years. And this is by no means just a sales office anymore. There are a lot of high tech roles in Chicago. And so Google's, you know, purchase of the Thompson Center, I think, really is showing its effort to double down on Chicago. Google reportedly is going to have triple its workforce over the next 4 years as it continues to hire more engineers and more techies. And so Google really believes that there is tech talent in Chicago, and it wouldn't be making this purchase and investment in the city if it didn't really believe that. And I think Google's marquee name is going to only continue to, you know, focus on or get other businesses to invest in Chicago as well, both from big tech and startups as well. So all good news really here pointing for Chicago as Google really doubles down on the city.
Are they sharing that space? Are they going to be like the landlord, or is it just going to be a Google place?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I know that the public employees are going to find elsewhere. So, I mean, it could just be a Google office, but I wouldn't be surprised if they leased it out as well. So more to come kind of as they continue to finalize those plans, I think. But, you know, as they get, you know, renovate the space and get in over the next 4 years, it's definitely going to be a major, major boost, obviously, for the Loop's business district. You know, obviously, there's been so much activity happening in the Fulton Market area. So great to see some activity boosting that area of Chicago. And, you know, Google really, hey, this marquee name that I think will attract other businesses as well.
Jim Dahlke's a senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Thanks, Jim. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, John.
1243. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Lollapalooza and the city of Chicago have formalized a deal that will keep the music festival in Grant Park for the next 10 years. The agreement could generate $4 billion in economic impact during the next decade. Some of the highlights of the new agreement include a minimum $2 million in taxes and fees for each year's four-day event, even though the take is usually much higher. Last year, it generated about $8 million. Cranes reports Lolla attendance cap is being raised from 100,000 to 115,000, and the Park District will get 5% to 20% of various revenue streams, including admissions, licensing, and sponsorships. Lollapalooza has also formalized a $2.2 million contribution over 4 years for arts education in Chicago public schools. McDonald's has ended a test of the McPlant sandwich in U.S. stores. We don't know how the test went, and it's unclear whether there will be a larger rollout of the plant-based burger. Analysts speculate U.S. sales have not been stellar. McPlant features a patty developed by Beyond Meat. The test was conducted at stores in Texas, Iowa, Louisiana, and California. The plant-based burger debuted previously in parts of Europe, where McDonald's says it sold well. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We've got your business of food and Steve Alexander.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beach Boys.
This time each year in our hometown, the county fair comes our way.
I would guess that's a deep track even for the most enthusiastic Beach Boys fans. County Fair from their 1962 Surfin' Safari album, and it brings us to the McHenry County Fair. It begins tomorrow in Woodstock, and for some of us, the county fair is all about food.
Well, you know, you get your usual beef sandwich, your hamburger, your hot dog, your tacos and burritos and corn dogs and pizza.
Rich Tobias, the fair spokesman, kind enough to list some of the food you can find there, and it's a long list.
And there may be even some fried catfish.
All of the deep fried food on a stick kinds of things that don't show up on a list of health foods.
There's always snacks like nachos.
But, well, I don't know, can you find healthy food at the fair, Rich?
I know that I had asked a vendor one time about selling healthy food at the county fair, and his answer emphatically was no.
That's because you sell people what they want, and at county fairs, most people do not want healthy food. But
I did find a couple of things there. You can do breakfast at 4-H with pancakes, egg, and juice. You can have a tossed salad, actually, through Farm Bureau. There's always corn on the cob. We usually have several vendors for corn on the cob. And if you're worried about the butter, just say no to the butter. There's a barbecue turkey leg, a grilled chicken sandwich. Cattlemen, they do grilled beef.
And on, but it isn't just about the food at the McHenry County Fair. There's a carnival, too. And there are all sorts of other things like 4-H animals and projects and educational displays dealing with ag and conservation and vendors from various businesses and organizations across the county. A big and rich concert on Saturday and a demolition derby on Sunday. It's all this week at the McHenry County Fair in Woodstock.
We are a good old-fashioned country fair.
Other county fairs beginning this week include Kankakee and Kendall counties and a whole bunch more the following weeks well into September. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN, and we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com.
There's a new club in Naperville. It sounds intriguing to me, an event space, a multi-purpose place. Cheryl Marcy's on a phone line, the director of sales at the Matrix Club. Hi, Cheryl. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about your joint. What are you guys doing over there?
Well, we're doing something very unique in this area. You know, the Matrix Club is 78,000 square feet of premier banquet, convention, entertainment venue. And we really hope to bring high quality social and corporate events, concerts and other forms of entertainment within the community.
There's nothing like that in Naperville right now?
You know, there are performance venues, sure, and there's, you know, art spaces and such. But to have everything housed in one space, yes, it is unique within this area.
Who's the audience for this then? Out-of-towners that are looking to stage an event, or do you see it being used by local folks?
A little bit of both. You know, we're hoping to partner with, you know, folks such as, you know, the arts community within, you know, DuPage Arts Foundation as well. However, you know, we are, you know, branching out to international arts communities in hopes to, you know, support their efforts and, you know, whether it's live performance or, you know, using our space for an art exhibit. So it's a little bit of both.
The Matrix Club. That sounds Nemo-ish. It sounds space ages. What's with the Matrix Club?
Well, you know, with the modern amenities and, you know, the contemporary design, you know, there is something to say with the Matrix. It is very modern and, you know, it has clean lines, but there's also the amenities and, you know, our custom design audio visual system. You know, we do have recording capabilities where, you know, we have the capabilities to not only record, but video record groups within, you know, so a lot of this is high tech within our facility using, you know, Bose, RCF and Danley and, you know, psychedelic lighting like Chauvet for, you know, to create that atmospheric setting. We also are, you know, kind of within each space using LED oversized screens because we are also a concert hall. So we're not only that banquets and conventions venue, but, you know, we transform our space into a concert hall where we can have live performances and entertainment for up to 2,100 people.
75,000 square feet in Naperville, the Matrix Club. And then you've got a dining room, the Matrix Room. Tell me about that.
Right. So this is an exciting element to the Matrix Club. You know, it's the Matrix Room is an eclectic, immersive dining experience with, again, another live stage. So here we have our extremely talented Michelin-starred chef, Yanni Sanchez. You know, she'll be leading the efforts there in the food and beverage program. But an interesting element to the restaurant, too, is we're hoping to, you know, provide music in the, you know, using that live stage performance, that live stage, you know, to have various acts on a daily basis, whether it's a jazz trio, acoustic set, or perhaps a small, you know, pianoist playing while folks are having, you know, their dining experience.
I was wondering what size events are you going to target? 200 to 2,000? What's the sweet spot for y'all?
Well, really, I mean, it really depends, John. I mean, in the restaurant, we can accommodate about 225 guests. But in the concert hall that I had mentioned, the banquets and conventions area, you know, we can accommodate about 2,100 guests for concerts. However, for banquets, about 1,200 for a seated banquet within that space. We should also, you know, promote our theater, which is, you know, the Performance Arts Theater under Drishti, which we have 210 seats within that space for live performances, workshops, seminars, theatrical performances as well.
Are people going to use this for wedding receptions or high school proms, or is it going to be more kind of a corporate thing?
Well, a little bit of both again, you know, so we have partnered with a few high schools within the community already, you know, Oswego East and Waubonsia, and they, and Neuqua Valley, they've booked already for 2023 to host their large scale proms. So there's a little bit of that. Also, you know, the social piece is definitely going to be, catered to, which is weddings and, you know, anniversaries and rehearsal, dinner parties, but the corporate events as well. You know, we hope to have conferences and workshops supporting, you know, the corporate events.
This is a new event space in Naperville called the Matrix Club. Cheryl Marcy is on a line. Where are you guys? Are you downtown or are you on the outskirts of town?
No, we are not in downtown Naperville. We are actually in the outskirts. So our location is, you know, on Route 59 between Ogden and Aurora, right across the street from Fox Valley Mall. So we're on the outskirts of Naperville downtown.
Free parking, I saw in some literature about you guys. That's attractive to folks, isn't it?
Yes, yes. So, you know, all of our attendees, whether they're concerts or large-scale events, you know, there is, you know, we're lucky enough to have free parking, complimentary parking here. So about 2,000 spaces, in fact.
And when did you first open? How new or old are you, Cheryl?
Well, we're not open just yet, John. We're actually still under construction. So the concept has been in the works for, you know, call it 10 and a half years, you know, with our CEO, principal, Madan Kulkarni. However, you know, the build out started about, I would say, a little bit over a year. So we're hoping to open, you know, late summer of this year.
Cheryl, good luck to you. Send us a ticket for the grand opening. It sounds like a good idea and a good location.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheryl Marcy's the director of sales. They're already selling. Boy, my prom wasn't at a place like that. The Matrix Club. Visit matrixvenue.com.